Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And this is a fill-in episode. That's right. Joe, Crazy Rider, is off on an adventure. He's taking his daughter Dana to Nevada, Reno, Nevada, specifically, where she will be starting graduate school. He is driving her out there, and he has left me all alone. So, we have a fill-in episode, and then we also have at least two, but maybe more, of the on-the-road episodes with myself, Joe, and our friend Butch, who we, on a very hot day, got into my car and drove around the Twin Cities for comics. That'll be coming either next week or, you know, in the future. I like to keep fill-in episodes, and now I finally have a bank of them. Plus, we have Free Comic Book Day coming up, which will also give us a bank of fill-in episodes. So, we start this episode. Most of the time when Joe and I do an episode, we talk before and after, and sometimes some of the before talk gets into the episode. But he was talking about the one-day convention, the first one-day convention that the Minnesota Comic Book Fans Group threw, a little behind-the-scenes stuff. They were not able to do conventions last year, and they do have to pay for storage space. So the storage space ate up all of the savings. Now, what they do, and I remember this from back when I ran it, basically the convention pays for the next convention. So when you run the convention, yes, you get money coming in, and you use the table sales to pay for the stuff that you absolutely have to pay for, the venue, any security, insurance, things like that. And then the money that people pay to get in is what you use for the next convention, things like plane tickets for guests, hotel rooms, we feed the guests, things like that, the party for the guests and the convention volunteers afterward. So that's really what goes on behind the scenes. And because of COVID, and they were not able to have two of their big money-making conventions, they have to do a series of one-day conventions to kind of make sure that there's money to pay for the storage for all of the stuff the convention owns, and to build up so that they can fly in guests. So Joe went to one of those one-day conventions, and we chatted about it before we started talking about his sketchbook. This is the fourth of the sketchbook episodes. So I want to thank you for downloading. There's a whole lot of stuff in this episode, and here it is.
I didn't think I was going to go, but it just, you know, with Chris having her COVID shot, she started feeling funky, but towards the end, it worked out okay. I actually thought I might stop by your house and drop off pie, because at first I thought it was at the Medina Ballroom, only to arrive to discover, no, it's at the Mermaid. Very yes. Different. So I turn around and go, shit, zip. But it was fun. I picked up a lot of junk. I mean, it wasn't a big gun, as you saw the floor plan, but Kelly seemed pleased. I mean, they got about 500 people that came. Talked to Juergens, Gordon Purcell a lot, most of the guys that are con-related. Gruber apparently went after, I don't do cons no more. I get lazy. Apparently Juergens had a commission ready for him. But this is how Gruber he is. He didn't even stop and say hi to, like, Tim at Granite City. Because Tim was like, Pat was here? I said, yeah, didn't he say hi? No. And when I left Pat a message, because he said he didn't want to go. So I was giving him grief, said, oh, sure, go without Cray. Boy, people think we divorced or something. And he called me back later, and we were just talking, and he said no, he hadn't planned to go. And then when Jurgen said he had to commission, he went in, he brought in a bunch of artwork. He was with Angie, so I think he didn't feel the obligation to look around and buy anything other than what he bought from Dan. And he got this really nice cover with Superman, Crypto, and Supergirl on the other side. It was a wraparound cover type thing.
Oh, okay.
Dan did a commission for him for like, he's like $1,100 or something.
Jeez.
So, yeah, Pat is, Pat's like a Dan Jurgens hog. But, anyways, talked with Tim, and I'll have to remind me of this when we get, because next week's, or Tuesday's previews, right?
Yes.
Okay, so we won't really have a lot of time to talk beyond the 2 hours we normally talk. I talked with Tim about Bad Idea, and yeah, a few other people talked about it too. Apparently, they chose the comic first to have this dollar book. The deal was, you know, one day to sell it, then you're supposed to return stock. You can't sell anything online over 30 days over an extended price. So it wasn't, that's why Tim didn't get in on the ground floor on that one. I think he said something about he had to like order 1,000 copies, maybe. That might have been in a different subject. But yeah, they just didn't want any part of it. They said there was no way to do it. I think the source got them. I don't know, because I didn't see anything other than Chad mentioning it. Hot Comics had them. You know, I've heard, I watched the chatter online about it. You know, guys are like, why don't you just call him, charge a dollar? And I said, you know, you realize that means they make literally no money on a dollar sale just for a publicity stunt. I said, that's just not worth it. I said, the fact that I can't come in later and get it because I couldn't get there on Wednesday because I worked. And a lot of people are like, yeah, I'm just not interested in the line. Don't care who's doing it. So, again, if you're going to be, you know, if you make it so it's difficult for someone to get your comic, they're just not going to do it.
Yeah.
Trying to think of what else. Damn it, I should have wrote it down. I know I talked with Kelly a little bit. We were talking about whatever happened to Nick's collection. I think we were talking with Mark Myrtle. You know, and I said, well, Steve Brown got some of it. We got some of it. But I think, and Kelly's not sure, but the estate hasn't been settled because I guess it was Adam and some cousins in charge. And some of the cousins sounded like they absconded with some of the comics.
Oh, no.
And again, that is scuttlebutt, nothing definite. But because I told him, I said, well, you know, there's a very specific book that I sold to Nick that I told Adam I would love to buy back. And if you ever see it, do you remember the IRS collection out of Chicago or Colorado?
Yeah.
The guy worked for the state and skimmed money and bought comics with it. And when they caught up to him, they grabbed it, sold it at auction. And then they call it the IRS collection, comes with a certificate and everything. I bought the 1950s Phantom Stranger number one, which I didn't realize I outbid Nick on it.
Wow.
Because he was distracted. You know, he was probably after other things. But in one of those, oh, shit, I need the money moments, I sold it to him. And, you know, Nick, whenever you buy something from Nick reluctantly, he always says you have first right to get it back. I've never seen it. But if you ever see it, like, just randomly as you wander through shit, then we know his collection surfaced somewhere. Because that, again, is a very specific book I sold to Nick. I mean, I sold him my first Sandman statue. And, I mean, I'll remember it because there's a little tiny piece of Morpheus, that the black part that crumbled off, kind of his robe. Because it was just not made very well. I think it was like, was that their first statue? One of the first.
Might have been.
Yeah, because, I mean, I bought it, and I think I sold it to him for like $800. And now it's like $1,200 or beyond. So I'm always looking for that specific book, though, the Phantom Stranger. You know, it's kind of like getting the firefighter number one from, or the showcase one that Jerome had, you know, just kind of a neat book. Especially since I sold the Liberty Meadows. Abada. Jojo, my niece, like. I don't know if you saw the picture of my swag.
Yes.
The box is all signed books. I paid about $400 for it. Probably Ooh. Retails about $2,000. I bought it Jeez. From Tim. Specifically, I told we were talking, and he said, this is just a box. I said, why isn't this on the store? He goes, I don't have room in the store. And it sits in my van, and I bring it out to cons. And, you know, and I said, well, dude, this is like my, wheelhouse. This is what I specialize on eBay. So I looked at it. And I thought a minute, and I said, well, I'll offer you $400, which is about 20-30% of guide or what you have it at. I said, that gives it about $5 a book. Most of them are about $15 books. There is a signed McFarlane in there that goes about $75. So there's a lot of, I won't say sell. I should make my money back real fast. The pile with Elvis on it is the dollar pile, again. Silly. I mean, that's a $30 book that I bought from him for a buck. Again, I could probably sell it on eBay, but you know, Tim, were you ever down in his basement?
No.
Floor to ceiling comic books. This is stuff that's on this comic site. This is on eBay. This is on their website. They got their fingers in all sorts of pies. And then, of course, he had like 10, I know you'd like that, 10 long or 10 shorty boxes full of brand new stuff they acquired, Silver Age, Golden Age, things you just, you know, plus the rest of the dollar books are things that, you know, as we go on, cover titles I've never seen. You know, I picked up a Ghostly comic from Carlton just because I know it's did go cover. Although they don't have much of a resale value, but it'd be fun to read. And then the graphic novels were all $5. And as you saw on the top, you know, a Wonder Woman archive, a Legion of Superhero archive. I mean, I talked to Mark Murdo about that. And he goes, yeah, I brought a bunch of these in and man, they sold like crazy. And I'm like, if only I was here earlier, but it worked out fine. By the time, they said when it first started, it was so busy. I know they capped it off at 200 people in the room, including the dealers and their helpers. But it was just people were just buying like crazy. Everybody had a good show. Everybody was very happy with it. I think Kelly's happy. He's got some seed money now for the fall con. And like I said, had it been at the Mermaid when I was done, I probably would have stopped at Ivy, gone straight south, and dropped some pie off at your door. Corey, I got pie. I'll leave it on the thing. I'm fully vaccinated. No. So it was fun. I can feel my voice going. It's not good. All right, we'll see how far we are. How many pitches do I got? Okay, let's see. We're at number 99, and I go to 115, so I think we should be able to bang this out pretty good. So this is just we're
finishing up.
An opener, do it, and then you'll tack on all the other stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Unless you want me to do like a quick con thing, I could just do a positive. Yeah, because then that can tack on, and then we don't have to talk about it on the previous episode. Okay.
Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And the reason you are getting a fill-in episode at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. Why are we doing a fill-in, Joe?
Because I'm on the North Shore of Minnesota again. And being in the wonderful world of proactive podcasting, which we try to do, we are filming this. Well, we'll call it filming. We're doing this episode before last week's episode so that episode can drop in its normal time. So 2 weeks from now, this episode can drop, so I can go up north and not have to worry about not having an episode.
I'm having an episode just listening to you explain it.
Confused? You won't be on the next episode of... And of course, we are going to come back and visit the last of my famous sketchbook.
Dun, dun, dun.
And this is an interactive one. So for those of you who have your computers on, pop up to the Facebook. Look for Crazy Joe Ryder.
My or page click is on the link in the description.
Which will be a little easier. Because if you're doing it the hard way, you go to photos, then you pop onto my albums and look to my sketchbook. And I believe the last one we stopped on was Skip Wilson from Smoot, Snappy Sammy Smoot. This is taking place at the famous Chicago Comic Con. The last one they did, because Wizard World just had bought it. And this is also the one that had the image tent on it. And there were tons of people, tons of places. I had just surfaced out of the underground alley. And if you want to click onto the picture of Don Rosa. Oops. I'm sorry. I regret the error. I don't have my wife's wine glass. So I can't give you the ding. You'll just have to pretend. There you go. So this one is Don Rosa. And basically, there was nobody at his table. I mean, this is amazing. He's just standing there. And I asked him if he could do me a quick Uncle Scrooge, and he obliged. Because outside of Carl Barks, Don Rosa's Uncle Scrooge are some of the best ever done. So again, just it was kind of amazing. And then as I was in the line in this particular room, and I'm trying to look forward to see who I was. I don't recall who I was waiting in line for. It might have been just crowded. So I would look, and the next person I ran into, Corey, if I could have a bing.
Bing.
This is Matt Fiesel of the Amazing Cynical Man, the man who makes a living doing stick figures. And what I like about this one, of course, it's an original, at least to me, original funny sketch. Wolverine picks his nose. And then he actually put the date on it. He had a little stamp, not only his Amaze logo that I think he uses for his self-published stuff, but then he put the actual date on it. So I don't have to guess when the hell this was. July 4th, 1992. And of course, I had no idea at this point that November or later on in the year, Pat Gruber and I would be buying Hot Comics. Ah, the young and innocent days.
The other thing about Matt Fiesel, used to work at Schindler's.
Really?
Yep, when he did Normal Man, he had Schindler show up from time to time in the strip, always as a porn place. Nothing about the comics, the baseball cards, anything. His nose, just a porn shop. Matt Fiesel kind of created the mini comics boom, if you could call it that, of the 80s and 90s, where mini comics, it's weird they don't exist anymore. You know, there are a few people who still do them, like Matt. But now it's mostly it moved into web comics. But mini comics were you could actually just take like 8 or 10 or 12 pieces of paper and you would draw your comic on them, fold them over and photocopy those pages, then fold and staple them yourself. And they'd be, you know, about the fourth the size of a comic. But they became so prevalent at conventions and stuff that Scott McCloud, who was doing Zot at the time and went on to do Understanding Comics and Making Comics, etc., became utterly fascinated with them as kind of a DIY comics and got Eclipse Comics to print giant-sized mini-comics. He did a mini-comics issue of Zot 10 and a half, with Matt Fiesel. And Matt Fiesel's stuff, it's well worth hunting down because he had a unique sense of humor. Really fun stuff. He did Normal Man, Cynical Man. They're just
not to be confused with Jim Valentino's Normal Man.
Yeah. And really fun stuff. All done in a stick figure style. Another mini comic that I've talked about are Eye Strain comics, which I've talked about those where it's, you know, just dots with word balloons with 64 panels to a page. So
it's fun stuff.
And then we have some news about mini comics, Joe.
Ooh.
Have you been following the Facebook of Jess Hyland?
Yes. As you know, or not, maybe not, the origins of the Crazy Joe Ryder, actually, I think it was just Crazy Ryder Comic Retailer. That's where what had happened is, I guess, Jess was, you know, we should have Jess on the show sometime. I have no idea what inspired him and Butch to do this. I suppose it was just watching me ramp around the shop and all the different escapades that were going on. And he made this mini comic. And we actually sold it in the stores, the Hot Comics. And I don't know what happened at West, Hot Comics West, but it actually, more people had it down on their list than any other comic. I mean, it only made what did he charge most, 50 cents maybe?
I think the last few were 50 cents.
Yeah. So it wasn't like he was making a lot of money, but this was fun things he did with it. He even crossed over with another mini comic, called Hal and Bob, who had a much larger publishing following. These guys actually showed up to some of the cons, and Tom Perry's one of the guys, and Mike Rittenhouse, he actually owns a comic book store, which I'm sorry I don't have it with me in front of me, but look them up. And Tom, basically, he's a big Godzilla collector, and I don't know if he eBays his stuff. Mike, of course, like I said, has that comic store. And if you do think of it, bug them. They might have copies of it around from time to time. However, the exciting news was Jess has found – he's either found – did he say he found the artwork, or did he find copies of the mini comic?
He found the original art.
Oh, fun. So we're, i.e. Corey and I, are going to pressure him to get them babies scanned and get them onto Facebooks. And then we'll share it with you guys because it's funny humor, even if you don't understand the personalities behind it. His goal eventually was to have almost everybody in the comic, and people would show up. I mean, I showed up. Pat showed up. Poor Mike Edmondson was in there. But then eventually, I don't know if Jess went to school or
yes,
he just
what it
lost
was.
Interest.
Jess used that as his entry project into the Minneapolis College of Art and Design.
Yeah. So just lots of fun. I know somewhere in my vast accumulation of crap, I have the comics, or at least I like to think so. Butch thinks he has it. So whoever surfaces it first, we want to get this online. And if you want to go to Jess Heitland's page, just tell him, hey, I heard all this about on Crazy Podcasts. I want to see it. Cause he's got kids, he's busy, he's got a job, but if we can keep friendly pressure on him, maybe we can get it up. I know when I put
my
cousin...
I have issues 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
And I have...
Right here in my grubby little hands.
Well, maybe we should get you to scan them bad boys. And again, I don't, have you seen that in Jay and Silent Bob where... when they're being pinned down during the shootout fight, and Banky's trying to tell them, you know, it's not my blanking concern. And Kevin Smith's, well, yes, it is. Essentially, you took our likeness and did not ask or seek permission to use our likeness from the comic book to the film. Therefore, you will blah, blah, blah. You know, it's a funny thing. It's essentially the same thing with Crazy Comics. You know, Jess didn't ask permission. He just did it. It was fun humor. I enjoyed it. And I think people might have thought I was going to get offended by it, but I co-opted it. It became Crazy Joe. Matter of fact, in my later on, if you go into the Hot Comics album, there's a I was going to make a button for everybody Nick, you, Corey, Ben, I've been Cray'd because there were certain people that got the full Cray mode. And Corey talks about it in our all the time in our first meeting. And I figured, you know what? Time to make the button. So he made the button, but he made the artwork. I have it, but I never got around to making the buttons. So it's all a rich tapestry. So, and of course, I named my second store Crazy Comics, and now it's this here podcast, and it's me on the eBays. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about, Corey, give me a ding.
Ding.
The next page. Let's, Corey, can you possibly guess what this page is about?
This looks like a page that was you took to the Comic Buyer's Guide, which at the time was a weekly newspaper that would print reviews, columns, press releases, and lots and lots and lots and lots of ads. This is before there was an eBay.
Yeah. I love the weekly newspaper. I remember when I picked up my first one of it, and I like to anticipate reading things. So a month later when I read it, I realized, oh, it's a newspaper. So I started getting it, and I actually subscribed to it until it ended. For one exception, though, when I had my shops, then I just ordered it direct. When I had Hot Comics, I ordered it direct from Krause. And it was a newspaper, so I would leave them there, stack them up, and then you return the ones that didn't sell. I think their newspapers I had, Buyer's Guide, Comic Buyer's Guide, Toy Shopper. I think they did a wrestling magazine when wrestling was hot in the late 90s. There might have been a General Collector magazine. Yeah, I figure, what the heck? It's just newsstand. I don't get a big discount, but I can sell it. When I sold Hot Comics, I got a subscription again. After that, when I had Crazy Comics, I let the subscription lapse, and then I would just order it direct from Diamond. At that point, they didn't have their subscription changed to, yeah, you buy them and you keep them. You got a better discount, but I was like, well, originally I would keep 10 on the shop. I had maybe 4 to 5 people that would buy a copy and then return the other ones. I said, well, so what I would do is I would get, I think, 3 copies. I don't know who ordered the other one. Might have been you, Corey. I know one for me, one for the shop, and then one for whoever the other subscriber was. And sometimes when the one sold, I would put mine on the counter. But it ended up being a monthly magazine and just was unceremoniously dumped.
Although, well, it was more than unceremoniously dumped. The whole company was unceremoniously dumped.
Yeah.
Let's see. They also had Blade, a magazine aimed at knife collectors. Goldmine, that's the one I remember, which was even bigger than the Comics Buyer's Guide, and it was for record collectors.
Yeah, I got that one.
And then there was Sport Collector Digest. Let's see. They do have an official website. And when you go to it, it says, we're having trouble with that site. Because in June of 2019, the assets of the company that bought them, they were acquired by non-automotive. All the non-automotive book titles were acquired by F&W. And at the time, Krause Publications was publishing 46 periodicals, had 750 books in print. Krause Publications also continued as an import. In 2019, everything was auctioned off in a bankruptcy option. The publishing assets and their brand was acquired by Penguin Random House. And some of their magazines, such as Numismatic News, which is for coins, is still in publication. That got bought by someone else. But most of it just went away.
Yeah. Although they didn't they do a final issue in Amazing Heroes? Or not, Alter Ego.
Yeah. Amazing Heroes was from Fantagraphics. And Alter Ego is through Tomorrows.
Yeah.
And the big problem with the Comic Buyer's Guide is they, Comic Buyer's Guide had been around for a long time, and someday we'll go into its history. But Krause bought it and put Donna Maggie Thompson in charge. And before that, it had mostly just been ads. It was called an ad zine. When they came in, they had newspaper experience. So they gathered up some fan writers and some professionals who'd worked in comics. But mostly they printed press releases, which is where, you know, you would send your press release if you have a new book coming out. And they would fund all of that with either ads. They would sell quarter page ads, half page ads, full page ads. DC, for every new number one, would always buy a full page on the third page of the newspaper until the mid 90s. Because they had basically gone to Donna Maggie and said, we want the third page. Because the first page was, you know, the cover. No, they bought the second page because the third page was the table of contents and the editorial. They wanted that second page in perpetuity. So you would open it up. There you go on the second page. It'd be, you know, whatever DC number one was shipping at that time. As eBay and the internet grew, the newspaper got smaller and smaller and smaller because, like most newspapers, the ads pay for the newspaper, and the columns basically are fit around the ads. But as there were fewer ads, there was less room for columns, and eventually they went to a magazine, thinking that would keep it going, with a much smaller ad revenue. And eventually, even that ad revenue went away, and Comic Buyer's Guide went away. I think it was like one issue away from 1700. It was it was canceled at 99. It was either 1699 or 1799 or 1899. I don't remember what one.
Yeah, the issue of Alter Ego 122 is kind of the final hurrah for Comic Buyer's Guide Remembered, where they put everything that was supposed to be in that final issue in it and allowed everybody to give it a proper reminiscing. Because I, you know, we're comic
geeks. It was $16.99.
If we'd have known it was the last issue, that 1670 would have been, you know, they could have double sized it and made it a hardcover, and we probably all would have, oh, cool. But a couple of trivia things. I mean, this was actually a magazine Pat and I put our first ad in. And somewhere I might have a copy of that ad. It was just we just typed it on a piece of paper, sent it in, and paid $10. And, you know, all I remember is at the time I had my Uncanny X-Men number one. I sell for $400, and Pat listed one side, I listed the other, and we got one bite on it. One guy said, I'll take $400 for all of it. And it's like, well, no, we're listing $1,200 worth of comics. So we didn't get much result for that. And that kind of dampened our enthusiasm because we wanted to do more. We did actually answer an ad once where some guy was selling a bunch of stuff, really good prices, and we sent in a money order, and that guy ended up scamming a ton of people. He got caught, was ordered restitution, blah, blah, blah. We never saw a dime back, and we lost about $120 maybe. So, yeah, again, not a lot, but for, you know, two kids starting out, that was a lot of money. Looking at the page, in my sketchbook, that is, you'll notice, okay, there's Tony. We'll go start at the top. Maggie Thompson, she's one of the co-editors, I guess, co-owners at the co-editor would be the right name. Going down, there's Robert Ingersoll, who wrote a column, The Law is an Ass. Did I say that right? Yeah. He still writes that nowadays. His big thing was, of course, writing about how law was oftentimes mangled and screwed up in comics, and it would always befuddle him because he'd be like, just call me, I'll tell you how to do it right. The big one, of course, is Peter David, writer of Stuff, who always had the last panel, I guess he was the last page, well, not last page, but, you know, the last columnist. Always someone I look forward to. He had a book published that's long out of print that had the best of his columns. And it's worth picking up. And then the final one to the left is Tony Isabella, chief priest of the High Church of Godzilla and most beloved man in comics, who I absolutely love because he would review comics. And a lot of the old buyer's guides I still have are because I wanted to go look at his old columns and go look up stuff that he recommended that I never got around to getting to. Although, again, looking at the pile of books behind me and only maybe 5% of them are read, yeah, that's never going to happen. Notice the blank spot. That was for Don Thompson, the husband of Maggie. And unfortunately, well, the only time I saw him was he was going into the bathroom. And I thought, well, I'm not going to be one of those guys. Hey, could you sign this in between shakes? Unfortunately, I never did catch up with him again at the con, and he passed away afterwards. So that's kind of a blank spot in memorial for him. And these, I guess, were the main people at the con there. And of course, this led up to the old joke where we were at the Chicago con, and one of the ways we would communicate with each other was more of a way of mocking Rob Liefeld. But we'd all go, hey, Rob, because when we were in the image tent waiting for it, Butch was there. And of course, he was just standing up, looking towards the back of the tent, going, hey, Rob, as we were waiting for the image guys to come in. And then, of course, when the image
as
guys came in,
everyone who came in's name was Rob.
Hey, Rob. Hey, Rob.
That must be Rob Liefeld.
That's not Rob. Hey, Rob. And then as soon as those guys came in and sat down to do their thing, Butch left. Of course, I may have that story wrong, me having anything wrong. And I know Butch likes these episodes. So, hey, Butch, get your ass on here. Tell us the correct story. The rest of the con, if I like saw somebody across the Comic Con, I'd be, hey, Rob. And they'd head back, hey, Rob. Well, I did that once, and then all of a sudden, some guy in the middle snapped his head. And then on the other end, hey, Rob, the guy snapped back. Hey, Rob, back and forth. And then he realized it wasn't him they were talking to. It was poor Robert Ingersoll. Sorry, Robert. Oh, well. One more bing, Corey.
Bing.
All right, let me clear. Oh, by the way, as a footnote, my buddy Mike Rittenhouse that we talked about, his comic shop is Hero House Comics, 1112 East Prospect Street in Indianapolis, Indiana. Tell him we mentioned him. He's also a band member. Okay, wait, one more time. A band member in Five-Year Mission, the group that they get together and they write songs based on the various Star Trek episodes. They have all their, I think they have their CDs in print. Whenever they do a Kickstarter for the new one, I have mentioned them before, and we've actually featured some of their songs a few years ago. So check it out. This next one is Mark Grunewald. And yes, Mark Grunewald's not known as an artist. However, Butch had a sketch. He comes, oh, look at this. Mark Grunewald did me this. He did a Captain America. And it was really cool. So I kind of ran down to Mark and said, hey, Mark, could you do me a sketch? He said, but I'm not an artist. I said, yeah, but I saw your Captain America. It was really cool. He was like, oh, okay. So he drew me this. And of course, it was on the 4th of July. 4th of July. Fa! So there you go. Mark Grunewald. I don't know how many Mark Grunewald sketches there are, but I know of at least two. So I was pretty
and
happy.
And he did draw some stuff at Marvel from time to time. Usually when it was, oh my God, the deadline is hit and we got to get this book done. Kind of like how Jim Shooter drew a couple of books at Marvel and were, oh my gosh, we got to get this to the printer. Mm-hmm. He would basically kind of do lay it out and then give it to an inker who was in the office, usually Al Milgram, who would turn it into something printable. And most of these were done over a weekend. I know of at least one book. Shooter says that he had to spend Friday and Saturday in the office kind of drawing and handing the pages to Al Milgram as he got them done.
Wow.
So
that would be fun. I might have to look those up just to see how they looked.
Butch and I have had this discussion a lot. He hates Al Milgram's art in the 80s. And I said, well, the reason for that is Al Milgram was an editor.
Mm-hmm.
And because he was in the office and he was one of the few editors who was also an artist, he would be in the office and they would go, we need this book on Monday. So he, Al Milgrom talked about it almost every weekend. He would be given a book to ink because they've needed it done so fast. And he would just plow through it on the weekend. He wasn't worried about making it good. It was just, is it printable? And the problem with that is it destroyed his reputation. Because if you're, if all people see of your art is the stuff that you do in a rush over the weekend because it has to be at the printer on Monday, it's not going to look good. And if you look at Al Milgrom's stuff in the 70s, especially on stuff like Guardians of the Galaxy, his stuff is really good. It's you could tell that he and Starlin were close because his stuff is a lot like Starlin in layout and design with a little more Rich Buckler-esque anatomy when Rich Buckler's not trying to draw somebody else. So, you know, very much that classic 70s Marvel style. But by the 80s, they were just shoving him stuff fast. And Butch doesn't care.
Yeah, doesn't care. I don't like it.
I can explain that all day, and Butch will still go, yeah, I still hate his art.
Doesn't matter. All right, give me a bing.
Bing.
All right. Here we go. This one's on its side, which is why it looks a little weirder. But this is the late, how do you say his name? Mike
Parabek.
Parabek. On the bottom corner is Len Straczynski. And this is, of course, the Golden Age Green Lantern. At the time, Mike and Len had, they were working on the Justice Society of America 1992.
Which was sampled before the first issue even came out.
Yeah. And at the time when I met Len, I had asked if he would, what I'd done, I said, like, Mike could draw it and could you write something, have him saying something? And Len declined. And I believe Mike probably did the lettering there. However, again, this is, Len didn't know me from anybody, but we got to be friends because I was on a panel with Len and a few other people, and they were talking about stuff. And Justice Society, I remember talking about Justice Society of America, and Len was just talking how frustrating it was that it was canceled before it was even published. And I kind of chimed up and I said, yeah, that's a killer for me as a retailer. I mean, why am I going to order a bunch of these books knowing it's been canceled? I don't have the money to, like, store books. Once a book's canceled, nobody cares. I said, I'll order for my people that want it. And I will order it for, you know, I'll put a few copies on the shelf, but I'm not going to push it the way I would if I'd known it was just going to keep going. So DC, you kind of cut your own throat on that one. I think Len appreciated what I was saying because I'm telling it from a retailer standpoint, you know.
Len also came to every Minneapolis Fall Con.
Yeah, he was fun. I mean, it was great. I got him to sign Prime books, you know, especially because I was a big promoter of the Ultraverse when I did have the shop finally. And he's one of the best guests. Very, very scarily intelligent. When I read some of the things he writes and some of the, he teaches classes at college level. I'm like, wow.
He has retired. He used to teach journalism at the University of Chicago, which is a high-end college. University of Chicago is not some rinky-dink state college like Western Illinois University that I went to. Nope, University of Chicago is a big-name college, and he taught in journalism and was in their HR department as well. So, highly intelligent guy, really fun to talk to.
Oh, yeah.
Really a shame that they cut his legs out from under him on this book because he and Parabek did such good work.
Yeah, it's a good series. I mean, again, not tremendously expensive, but worth finding it. I don't know if there's a collected edition.
Yes, there is.
Okay, so either way, find it. It's definitely worth checking out. Give me a bing. Thank you. Okay, this one I have to sadly say I don't know who it is.
I do.
Who?
Neil Vokes.
Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. Do you know how to spell that last name?
I can find out because I'm friends with him, so let me type it here.
Again, this is one of those where I ask, who's your favorite character? Because, again, remember, this is 1992, so it wasn't expected to do a head sketch. And it became kind of the norm for a while. So I would
V-O-K-E-S.
What is it?
V-O-K-E-S, and I just tagged him on it.
Thank you. Thank you. I think... I don't know if that's the Submariner.
No, it's obviously a horror character. Neil's a big horror guy. At the time, he was drawing a book called Eagle, which was an indie book, martial arts book. But he's a big horror guy. He's one of these guys who dabbles in comics. He has other jobs. But he's been drawing some horror comics here and there over the last 30 or so years.
Cool. Thank you. I hate that. What I've got to start doing, I don't collect the head sketches the way I used to, but what I should do is just kind of write a little thing on the background who it is. Because a lot of times I had to go back, and if I didn't have a specific memory with it, I had to really figure out who. Like this one here, this is another person I don't remember who, but it's an underground artist. Yep.
Steve something.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I'm embarrassed to say I don't remember who, but I did ask him to draw, you know, I don't know if that's Cherry Pop-Tart or either way. I draw it this way because then I remember you're an underground artist. Somewhere in my collection I have his comic. I will, once I go through and find it.
I'm going to take a look because it looks like the name is Steve Ulm.
Okay.
And no Steve Ullman.
So if you know, if you're out there in listener land, know this, or if you happen to be the artist, give me a quick note because I would love to give you credit because it was so much fun to talk to you and see you, even if I don't remember your name. All right, give me a bing.
Bing.
All right, this is Tim Truman for me, and I remember this one because Tim Truman was at the. When you go back to. The Mike Perlbeck, Len Straczynski sketch. We're at the MCBA show, and this is at the 1992, and we're still at the Thunderbird. Because I know one of our buddies, Willie Mellon, was really, really keen on getting Tim Truman to the Thunderbird just to have him see the decor, which was pretty much a combination of Native American from Crost and quiche to authentic.
Yeah, and, Native American stereotype from the 50s.
Yeah.
The lighting fixtures were totem poles. They had wooden papooses hanging on the walls.
Went out front in the driveway.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Thunderbird, most people would just walk around the place gobsmacked.
Yeah.
It became much easier to tell people about it after Twin Peaks because you would say, okay, imagine the Great Northern on Twin Peaks, except the owner really likes the Indian motif. And they would show up and go, yeah, you're right. And their eyes would be as big as, you know, saucers and just looking around it. This has the worst taste of any hotel in history. Sadly, it has gone away.
Yeah.
It has been torn down and is now a parking lot. So they paved paradise.
Yeah. It's either a parking lot or just a blank spot in case a plane crashes because it's right at the beginning or it's within a certain amount of a runway. I do remember because I asked him the same thing. I said, you know, I've got your run of books. I've never read them. If you can draw somebody from it, I will try to find it. And as he was drawing this, Willie came over. Hey, you're getting a sketch from him finally. Cool. And then Tim kind of admitted, okay, this really isn't in anything. This is just something out of my head. So Tim was trying to play a little joke on old Gray. You know, I'm looking for a character that I'd never find. I forget what he was doing in 92.
He was doing a couple of graphic novels. What was the name? I think it was Tecumseh. Okay. No, Scout was done because Eclipse was done.
Okay.
Tim Truman. Yes, he was working on Tecumseh.
Okay.
Which was a graphic novel based on the Indian warrior Tecumseh.
Now, part of my... I was always very grateful when these artists and creators would do this for me for free. So I was never one to like, oh, draw me a scout or something. And I probably should have because, you know, they probably would have obliged. And if I paid for it, I paid for it. We're coming up to only the second one I ever paid for. And if you recall, the first one I ever paid for was all the way back on that first episode from Don Simpson, because I asked him for a specific one, the Megaton Man opening a copy of Border Worlds, and they were trying to retire or else. but this was kind of cool. This was neat. I like this one. Go on, give me a bing.
Bing.
You recognize him?
Yes, that is Mark Stegbauer.
Yep, we've had him on the show. This is early Mark. He's only gotten better, folks. And again, draw me your favorite character. He drew me a thing. Not a giant-sized thing. Nope, we saved that for Corey's joke.
No, that's a giant-sized man thing.
Yeah, yeah. This is just a giant-sized
thing. This is just the thing.
It's a mini thing. It's a
who's into head,
head thing. Thing head.
His book was Marvel 2-in-1, which, okay.
Yep.
70s were a weird time.
It was. And we're 90s. We're in the 90s now, so. All right, next Bing.
Bing.
Holy cow, we jumped to 1993. No, this is just an out of order one, folks. Basically, something happened between this and the following sketch where a page was actually skipped. So, but in 1993, Jeff Smith was doing a signing at Dreamhaven. And so we went to Dreamhaven. And Jeff perfected doing a quick head sketch because people were asking for head sketches then. And I actually used this in a one of the Hot Comics newsletter when I was promoting Bone. I think because Bone went to Image for a while, and I figured that was an appropriate time to pull it out and say, hey, you'll be able to not only catch up news stories, but catch up with number one and go along with it. So so that one's out of order, but again, it's cool. And I just mentioned in a couple podcasts ago, his Kickstarter is going on, Tukey, I believe. So I believe at the time this podcast will drop, you'll still get a chance to jump on it. Some hardcover. I bought the soft covers of the book. He's since added hardcovers. He's got some stretch goals that are fulfilled. So check it out. And plus, he's also been putting up some rare Bone stuff as add-ons. And who knows what's there. If it's probably gone by the time we get there. Corey, give me a shot.
Bing.
All right. Who is this, Corey?
Mike Vosburgh.
Yep.
Who he's done a lot of comics over the years. He took over Archer and Armstrong after Barry Windsor Smith left.
Yeah. This is the only other one I bought that, that I paid for. And I don't mind because he was accepting donations to the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, which the MCBA at the time, that was their big charity.
At this time, we were still the Literacy Council.
Oh, Mike was collecting for CB.
Right.
Comic,
the Legal Defense Fund was when Nick came in.
Oh, that was when I suggested it to Nick. I said, we might as well do something. We were really good at doing a local charity, but we weren't getting a lot of love from them.
Yeah.
So I suggested, why don't we just bring in a more comic-wide one? And we had a number of years where we got some pretty good love from the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. My favorite year was, I'm bad with names. Chuck Rosinski's daughter came.
Yes. I made a lot of money that night.
Oh, and we co-hosted the art auction, and she was fun.
Shall I tell you why we had the Literacy Council?
I will. I just want to add one thing before I forget. The other guy who was impressed with the Thunderbird was, in fact, Chuck Rosinski when he came. And he loved it because Pat tells when him and Chuck talked about the tapestries that were on the wall, because Chuck collected Native American tapestries and rug, and he could see the symbolism in them. It's just fascinating to listen to. But anyways, what was with the literacy?
What it was, our first art auction was with Glenn Howman, who did the art auction in Chicago. He was the one, basically, he ran the thing. So he worked with the Literacy Council of Chicago when he came up to run our art auction. He connected with the Minnesota Literacy Council, and then we just stayed with them because we had that connection with Glenn. But over time, you know, the Literacy Council, I think the last couple of years, they didn't even send anybody. I had to run the money over to their headquarters because all the people that Glenn knew had left. And there was turnover, so they didn't know who we were anymore. So that's why we worked with the Literacy Council the first few years, because of Glenn setting it up for us.
Nick explained it, too, that they weren't a actual council. They were more of a conglomeration of people who worked for literacy advocacy groups. And this was kind of like they just met, not necessarily coordinating things, but... And like Corey said, when things turn over, people forget, they lose their institutional memory. And again, not a knock on them. We just went on to other places. Even this year, I'm not sure who the FallCon charity will be. I will be there with the charity booth, though. But as you know, we get more and more details, we'll definitely be talking about that. So Mike did me a really cool Archer and Armstrong. For me, those early Valiants were a lot of fun to read. They, for a while, were just ungodly expensive, and then they dropped, and now they're back to collector level if you want to pick them up.
Or you could ask your local comic shop, because they do have where you can get all of the Valiant Classic for, let's see how much it is here.
You're one of those weird digital guys. I thought it was like about $50 to $70.
Yep. The original is 50. It comes in a nice box, and then it comes on a flash drive that is branded. It has the Valiant logo and everything on it. I have it right here. It's cool. Kind of a keychain with the flash drive, and then you can get the current Valiant up to, I believe it is 20. I'm going to take a look here. Up to 2019 on a separate one. The first one is 695 digital issues. That is the entire classic Valiant. The new Valiant is 592. And it's weird because Valiant, ever since the, what was the movie? The Blood Somebody.
Bloodshot.
I think they put all their eggs in that basket, because since then they've kind of pulled back really far on their publishing. I don't hear as much about them anymore. I think they were really kind of counting on Bloodshot to be the thing that made them money, and when it didn't, it's okay. Well, I guess we're going to have to wait and see. So all there's right. Valiant.
I know you're shocked, but we've only got 5 pages and 6 more artists to cover. So give me a bing. All right. Kurt Swan, Golden Age, Silver Age, 70s, 80s artist. He was our guest of honor that year. Yep. And he did a little, I should have, but I didn't ask him to do a sketch. I don't think he was doing sketches there. At least I don't know of anybody that got one. But he did a little, signed his name, did a little S. So that was pretty cool. It was kind of neat to meet him. Again, I was too dumb and naive to really actually ask him intelligent questions, but I was well aware of who he was and a little bit of awe of him, to tell you the truth.
We got the mayor of Minneapolis to make the first day of the convention Kurt Swan Day, because he is from Minnesota.
Yep. So, and I don't know if I have a copy of that. I know Brian Wilson gave me a bunch of stuff, because for a while I was going to try to be the historian of MCBA, but we had one year where I like laid out a table tapestry and I made kind of a collage of everything. And they have since done other proclamation days, and but Kurt Swan was the first one. I think that actually got into the Minneapolis paper, if I recall yep. right.
Now, we don't have a Wikipedia page, and they have never done a Crazy Comics and Stories Day of Honor.
No.
I think St. Paul should honor us.
They should, but they won't. I know.
And you even have an in with the city of St. Paul.
I do. I'm kind of depressed. Give me a bing.
Bing.
All right. Now we're leaving the MCBA, and this, of course, is the incredibly hyper-talented and much sought-after Adam Hughes, who's been a friend of the MCBA for a long, long time. This was one of his appearances at Hot Comics Richfield. And I just asked for a simple head sketch. I never, to my eternal regret, asked Adam Hughes for a sketch. I know whenever he would come to a con, everybody would line up and I want this sketch. Well, this year I'm getting this sketch. Well, he's going to do me this year. And I know I remember talking with Nick, because Nick said, Joe, do you ever want a sketch? Because Nick would shoehorn me in. And I said, I don't honestly know what I would do. And then, of course, a number of years later, I discovered I collect Supergirl art, and Nick was going to take a favor that Adam owed him and have him draw me a Supergirl sketch, and then I would pay Nick. Sadly, Nick passed away, and Adam, in a incredibly generous, I don't know what you do, he came as a special guest to the MCBA, no charge, just as in memory to Nick. And the stories of poker games with Adam are legendary. I actually have a picture, and again, this is one of those things I'm going to get up on the Facebooks, of the MCBA years. And it's a lot of the pictures are taken at the Thunderbird, too, where for a while I would walk around with the championship belt, baby, and I would have people pose with it. And then I would take a Polaroid, and I'd have them autograph it. I did this primarily because so many comic creators, I had no idea what they looked like. I'm not talking Steve Ditko. He's legendary. That's. But I mean, even people like when Carol Kalish died, I could not find a picture of her. And I mentioned that to Maggie Thompson when I saw her way back in Chicago that year, and she said, yeah, she just didn't want her picture taken. Now you can find them with Google. You can almost find anything. And so I just thought, you know what? I'm going to take pictures of things. The crux of my picture taking started at you and I went to the San Diego Comic-Con, where I would start taking pictures of people. And my goal, this was on regular film, so I have these somewhere as well. My goal was to take these pictures, a picture of them holding the book that they were publishing. And then I was going to go back and I would make a display with them. Kind of, I didn't have end caps, but I got on a wall with the grid work. I could like, okay, here is such and such who did Age of Heroes. And then I'd have the book there. So kind of you could see him and all the stuff they did. And I got a lot of those. And again, I'll dig them out. This is all comic history stuff. I should just post somewhere. But anyways, at Hot Comics St. Richfield, they had Adam Hughes in. And of course, people came in. This wasn't the type that Adam Hughes has now, where he's waiting in line. He spends all day looking at sketchbooks or belly buttons. You actually talk.
He doesn't do that anymore.
No, he doesn't, because what's happened are people who beg for a sketch, and he does it, and then the next morning it's on eBay for triple what he asked for it. He still does sketches. He always did sketches for our convention's charity auction. But yeah, he's done with that. He can make more money doing books, doing covers. I'm sure if I were to come to him and say,
and
hey,
commissions. Let's remember, this is a guy who's done commissions for George Lucas.
Yeah. And if you pay, I'm sure I could come up to him and say, hey, you know, tell him my sad story with Nick. I said, but I'd like to know how much I could get a commission for. I'm not that rich yet, but it's in the works.
Now, there was
one time, obviously, for his favorite character, and he drew a quick minimalistic Vampirella, which is just amazing. My favorite one of the day was employee in Scrub at Hot Comics Richfield, Dave Storberg, who had him do a non-woman. And only Dave, I forget what was done. Maybe I should send Dave a note and see if he has any of that art left. Because, again, I would love to just get it published, so, you know, to share with people. But yeah, it was a fun day. It was just a fun. I got to hang out. I didn't hang out later because they all went out to eat. But it was a pretty good day at Hot Comics Richfield.
At one of the MCBA shows, you know, normally you would strand me at the charity table.
I'm going to get gas.
But there was one time I was able to get away. Went over to his table, and you know, he was like, "Wow, you're able to, you're on the floor. I thought you just stayed over there and then we're at the poker game." No, Joe let me get away so I could buy some stuff. He said, "Look, would you like to be in line for a sketch?" And I said, "No, because you wouldn't trust me not to sell it. However, I'd like each of the sketchbooks you would sell. And I'd just like you and your wife, Allison, to sign them. That's all I want."
Herself is an amazing artist, too.
Yes. So they went through and signed everything. And he said, "You sure you don't want a sketch?" And I said, "Yeah, I can't afford you." I was, you know, working different thing. And I said, "And also, come on, you're here to have fun. I made enough money off you last night. You can be here and have fun." I am not someone who asks for sketches unless it's an artist who they could do the sketch at home or they're there to make money. Adam Hughes makes enough money off everybody. You know, I remember, who was it? Buzz. I was listening to an interview with Buzz once, and he said he hated being at conventions, but that's how he made money. So what he would do, he would set up at his table just until everybody he had gotten everybody for sketches. Then he would go back to the hotel and sit by the pool and do his sketches. Or in San Diego, he would go out to the beach and do his sketches. Then on the last day, he would come back and contact everybody. "Your sketch is ready." Adam liked to chat with people. He liked to hang out. He liked to play poker. So I'm not somebody who does a lot of, you know, I need a sketch. But I will buy sketches from artists online, because that's how they make their living.
Especially nowadays.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can contact them. Don't be coy. Ask how much, you know. At this point, I was happy to get a head sketch. But you notice what happened. You're going to start seeing gaps, because what was happening about this time, people were expecting head sketches now. And we talked about how Dave Sim said, if you're going to be a creator, just figure out a quick head sketch and bang it out. But to me, it for the longest time, I was doing something unique. It wasn't as much fun anymore, you know, just because everybody wanted a head sketch. And it's like, no, I pick and chose who I would get sketches from. And Adam was one. If you give me a bing.
Bing.
Here is Doug Mankey doing the mask. Now here we're popped up to 1994, and he was doing the mask, and I asked for the mask, and he did the mask, and I just laugh when I see this thing. I mean, it's brilliant. Give me another ding.
Ding.
Here is a Xander Cannon. He had his own self-published series called The Replacement Gods, and eventually it went to Image, I believe, as part of their Shadow line. And as you notice, it there's kind of, first of all, that's scan fade, not because you can kind of see there's an image behind it. That's the scanner. But if you do notice, there's little peckers of ink around. That's from the previous sketch, because it bled through. And that was a weird problem that didn't happen a lot of times, but occasionally it did. But Xander was cool. 1997, he did this for me. Again, this was a 3-year gap of doing this. And he did it. And he was real. I mean, a lot of these guys at the time were fun, because they would sit back and they'd look through the sketch and we'd talk. And he was amazed at some of the artwork that was in there, and amazed that I wanted him to be in it. And, you know, Xander's gone on to do amazing things. But
working with Alan Moore. Oh, and then took over the series Alan Moore was doing.
Yep.
Think about that.
Yeah. But his, if you can find it, I don't know how hard it is to find. Again, not sought after. But, you know, it's a fun series to read. I have no idea if he'll ever go back to it. But you never know. One more bing.
Bing.
Okay, again, out of order. Friend of the show, all around great guy. If you don't know who this is, I want you to stop this podcast right now. Go all the way back to podcast one. Listen to all, how many episodes?
500 and
some odd change.
Because we don't know, you know, when this will drop. Yeah. So.
No, we have no idea. But then you'll have an idea who this is. This is the original Captain Marvel. I don't care what you say, Marvel. You go in DC, yes, you have to call him Shazam. This is the big red cheese as Dr. Sylvania. Wait, did I say that right?
Yep.
Sylvia? Yeah. In honor of C.C. Beck, Pete drew this for me. He was drawing Power of Superman at the time.
Power of Shazam.
Oh, what did I say? Superman? I'm relevant because I have stories with Pete Krause. And if you recall, I actually have, I'm not going to repeat them here, but if you go all the way back to the first time we dropped this here podcast, when I had the guys doing Entropy Tales on the show, I believe it was, let's see, Pete Krause, Timothy Fay, and let's see, flip that other one, Neil. I can't read his signature, but they did Entropy Tales. It was Pete's first work. Paul Ewart was part of it. Alan Payne. But again, this is Pete in his finest. Pete has, one of these days I'm going to get a Pete Krause Supergirl. I've talked to him a couple cons, but then, you know, COVID just effed everything up, and I'll reach out to him. Maybe if he gets to go to FallCon, he's doing stuff here and there. He did, Irredeemable with Mark Waid for IDW. He's
currently working on something he can't say because
I don't know if he's on
Facebook or not, but I follow him on Twitter.
And yeah, he's Twitter not on is Facebook.
Where he shows his work.
Okay, I'll have to. I'm on Twitter, never, but I will. I'll have to ding him and talk to him because I'd like to really get a Supergirl from him. But he was. One of the last pages that I ever filled out, and I saved it for him. Although, if you give me a final ding.
Ding.
This is the inside back cover. And this is Marty Nodell, the creator of the original Golden Age Green Lantern.
And does Joe know what other famous character did he create?
I used to, but I'm blanking.
Poppin' Fresh.
Oh, geez, I had that. I had his face. Come here, Pop. Pop you in the belly again. So this was Marty's go-to sketch. He got, what would you say? And when people started appreciating Golden Age artists, he would tour. This is 1992, and he went right to the back cover and drew it. I mean, I wasn't going to say no, don't do it, but it was nice that he did that. And, of course, you can find his zero-hour sketches, not as common as they used to be, because he would get that blank zero-hour and draw the lantern and put his Marty Nodell, the year he did it, and Green Lantern 40. I may still have one on the eBays. So if you know, drop this here podcast, check it out if you want, because you know I'll give you a deal on eBays. But we'll talk about that later. But this is it.
The other thing about Marty Nodell, he left comics and got into commercial art, working for General Mills. Who owns Poppin' Fresh?
Yeah.
Hold on.
They might have sold it.
Pillsbury.
Mm-hmm.
So he worked for Pillsbury creating characters and doing art and creating ads and things like that. And when he retired, he was contacted. Another one of these guys who had no idea that anybody knew who he was. And I don't remember who, it might have even been Roy Thomas, got him to come back and do some work on comics. And that got him into comic conventions, and it became his retirement career. So through his retirement, he and his wife would basically travel the U.S. by having comic conventions invite him. And what a cool way to retire.
Yeah.
And
yeah, he was an amazing guy. Fun to talk with. His wife was utterly charming. To me, I wish I had kept the sketchbook going. I looked high and low for an autograph book like this. I did start a different sketchbook, and I believe I got a few people in it, but eventually I just kind of let that go. I might have actually sold 3 pages out of it, just tore them out and just sold them as sketches online. This, of course, is probably, this will probably be an estate thing that my daughter will sell sometime, because I don't ever plan to get rid of this. I mean, I appreciate being able to do these fill-in shows with you. It brought back a lot of memories. It was great doing it with you, Corey, because you can add stories, especially things that I was not necessarily aware of. I mean, there were so many. I look back at the old MCBA shows and all the people that were on there, and I didn't get to be fans of them until after they were at the show. I'm like, brr. So, damn it, somebody invent time travel. I got to go back and get some real sketches. I thought if I were ever to do this again, and I might, I would bring 3x5 cards to cons and just ask the creators to, if you would, do a sketch and then sign an autograph. Because I've been seeing some of them float up in various places. I talked about it when I went to the Star Trek con, how somebody took these sketches where they would mat them with a photograph of the actor usually above it, or the character, and sell it that way. But there's a lot of 3x5 sketches out there. It's easy to store. I don't know. And that's the thing, you know, I ran out of this sketchbook and I just couldn't get it going. Polaroid stopped making them, so I stopped taking pictures. Right now, I do the Supergirl sketches if I can afford them or if I can do it, and generally just have a fun time wandering around a con. Speaking of cons, unless you have anything else you'd like to add on the 4-part storied saga fill-in episode of my sketchbook.
The only thing I would like to add is Butch has said he would like to do these with us for Butch, his sketchbook.
Find your sketchbook and we will get together whenever, and we will set up. That'll be another podcast fill-in. We'll just save it. Because these are timeless. I mean, these autographs aren't going away. The stories won't go away. And we would love to have it. Especially because not only is, I want to see his Mark Grunwald. I'd like to see the Jim Lee one we talked about. Corey, I want to see the Dave Sim one he drew. The one you talked about. When we went
to
see him.
Yeah.
So if you can never dig that up in your momentary crazy life, these would be fun things to just get on Facebook. And we'll bug Jess about crazy comics. Crazy retailer. Crazy comic retailer. Art Adams, I'm coming for you. Akbar! But as I mentioned, there was actually a comic show a couple weeks ago on the, as this drops, it was on May 15th. MCBF did their spring fling. As you know, they basically went a long time, a year without any shows. And that actually had, it's put a strain on their resources, because without one show would feed into the other. And then all of a sudden everything stopped. Just recently in our state, they've lifted the restrictions as of the end of the month. So there are no more indoor restrictions. There's no more mask mandates. Individual cities, counties can do their own, but for the most part, and I don't know if, at least in the United States, things seem to be under control. Worldwide, maybe not, but whatever. We'll have more rounds, hopefully not, knock on fake wood. But where they were able to do a show, they did it out at the Mermaid Ballroom in Moundsview, not too far from the Blue Soda Shop that Corey and I like to go to and talk about whenever we visit. It was a smaller venue. There were only a few guests. When I went in there, I didn't get a chance to talk to Al Gazira. I saw David Wheeler, talked a lot with Dan Juergens and Gordon Purcell, did a lot of catch up. Saw a lot of friends there. Ben Piskett. Ben gave me an update about his comic thing. If you recall, the last con he was doing, he had this thing, and I actually have it up here, called Clay Hollow, where he was doing his comic book is what he was doing. And he has since turned it into a graphic novel, because the plan was, is you buy the ash can, which I did, and we talked about it and reviewed it. And then the following spring con, he'd have it ready. there was no spring con, there was no fall con. Well, he was at the show just volunteering, and I asked him about that. He says, no, it turned into a graphic novel. If you do have these, or if you are interested in getting it, you can head find him on his Facebook page, or I don't know if he has a website, but that's Ben Piskett. Let me just spell his name out, because you know how I am with names. Bennett Piskett, P-I-S-E-K. And if you have that coupon, he's turned it into a graphic novel. His goal is to have it ready, hopefully before FallCon, but definitely at FallCon whenever that happens. So I just told him I'd give everybody a quick update on that. Talked with Tim from Granite City a lot, did a crazy deal with him. And, of course, I'm just going to refer you, go over to my eBays, because I bought things specifically, just stuff he couldn't sell that I know I can sell. And I'm not even going to talk about it now, because I have no idea what's going to be there by the time you guys get there. And if it's all gone, don't worry, it won't be. There'll be plenty of other stuff there. Everybody had a great time. The business was brisk. I went there later. And when I got there, it was really slow. But talking with some of the dealers, they were like, in the beginning, it was crazy busy. I think there's such a pent-up demand for a Comic-Con that they easily filled the room. They had the limited quantity because the room wasn't that big, not like when they were out at the fairgrounds. And a couple times they had to stop people coming in, but everybody came in. A lot of business was done. When I got there, I swear the dealers looked shell-shocked, because they said it was so busy and things were going so fast. And they made whatever they planned to make. And then, of course, I come in and I'm buying more, and there were still a lot of last-minute deals to be had. So it was a good start. Kelly is very excited. He's looking forward to getting – once the dust settles, I imagine he's doing an Odin sleep, as con doers want to do. And he's as FallCon gets closer, he's definitely going to let us know what's going on. I told him we'd love to break the news and do whatever we can to support it, you know, get the con back on its feet. So it was a fun time. It was had by all. And I know there's a couple other cons going around, but if you're a con goer, even if we're talking nationwide, if you're a con, what would you call them? Convention official, you're putting a show on. You know, Corey and I talk a lot about what's going on in Minnesota, but hey, this is a worldwide podcast. We're willing to drop names. We're willing to drop where you're at, and just send us a note. And I believe, Corey, this is how you do that.
Our newest sponsor is NordVPN. Let's be honest, if you're out on the internet, you need a VPN to protect you. There's all sorts of things going on the internet where people can track you. You could accidentally download a keylogger, all sorts of things. NordVPN gives the best security possible. It has a password manager which generates complex passwords, syncs across all your devices, stores your notes and credit card information. It also gives you 10 gigabytes of private cloud storage, secure files. It backs up your data automatically. But the main thing it gives you is peace of mind. It gives you peace of mind when you're out on the internet, when you're streaming, when you're playing games, when you're listening to podcasts like this one. It gives you safety anywhere at any time. It protects your online activity. You get full access to all content. And if you use the link go.nordvpn.net/3ku, it'll take you to where you can get a great deal for a 1 month plan, a 2 year plan, a 1 year plan. They are our newest sponsor. We're happy to have them. And if you would like to sponsor something here at any of the podcasts on the Solitaire Rose Network, you can. Just email me, solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. Not only that, Dangerous Dan Morris here. Hey, Dan, you got any conventions coming up?
No. No.
Cool.
No, not yet.
Oh.
Well, cool. I do keep busy with all of these other podcasts. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is currently on a pause, basically because COVID-19 has made it so that I have to work a lot of extra hours at both jobs, but you can still go and listen to my other podcasts. Now, you're probably listening to Crazy Comics and Stories, which is the main podcast, but on this same feed, KRAYZCOMIX, is Solitaire Rose Radio, the solo radio podcast that I do. I've done interviews, I've done short stories, I've done all sorts of things, and you can get to it right here on this same feed. I also do a podcast called Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's over at novels.solitairerose.com. Dangerous Dan Moore and I, and of course Wolfie B. Bad, give you bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. You send in your questions, and we give you the aforementioned bad advice. And then myself and Adam Vermillion from For the Love of Comics do the Fantastic Forecast at fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com, where we go through the issues of the Fantastic Four, four issues at a time, to give the plot and commentary on each issue. That's not all. Yes, I'm crazy. I still, over at PWInsiderElite.com, every week on Wednesday, do a recap of the latest episode of AEW Dynamite. I write up what happened, and then myself and Anthony Pyrus will do an audio. Now, you can only listen to the audio if you're a member at PWInsiderElite.com, and if you're a wrestling fan, you should be, where we then break down the episode, talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, give it a grade, and let you know if you should have watched that episode. Those are the other podcasts here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network. Thanks. Now, normally, we would ask Joe what's going on the eBays, but this is way in the future.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Joe, what's your eBay site?
It's there. Well, no, whatever. Crazy. KRAYZ. I've been there for a long, long time. And I love to give deals to people that not only listen to this here podcast, but, you know, there's a couple groups on Facebook I'm in. Minnesota Toy Posse. Actually ran into one. We were both leaving Target with armloads of toys. And, hey, you with the Toy Posse? Yeah. Hey, good to see you. And, of course, if you're on the Minnesota Comic Squad, just send me a note. I'll cut you a deal on stuff. I love doing deals. I love selling things. I've been selling things since, I don't know, when's that first sketch, way back when? Oh, whatever. I'll go look it up on the show. KRAYZ. Come get some.
Well, believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about Joe's sketchbook for an hour and a half.
Thank you. And Butch, come get some.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most, Joe.
Well, I got nothing to say. I'm on the North Shore. I'm sitting there in Lake Superior. I'm feeling good. Corey, just hit your music for a change.